Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 16, text number 8. Those of you who can follow, please do so. Asatyam apratishtham te Jagad Ahura Nishvaram Aparaspara Sambhutam Kemanyat Kama Haitukam. In this chapter, Lord Krishna describes the divine and demoniac natures. This verse is a description of the demons, their idea of what this world is about. So they, Krishna says, they say, means the demons say, they say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Purport. The demonic conclude that the world is phantasmagoria. There is no cause and effect, no controller, no purpose. Everything is unreal. They say that this cosmic manifestation arises due to chance, material actions and reactions. They do not think that the world was created by God for a certain purpose. They have their own theory that the world has come about in its own way and that there is no reason to believe that there is a God behind it. For them, there is no difference between spirit and matter, and they do not accept the Supreme Spirit. Everything is matter only, and the whole cosmos is supposed to be a mass of ignorance. According to them, everything is void, and whatever manifestation exists is due to our ignorance in perception. They take it for granted that all manifestation of diversity is a display of ignorance. Just as in a dream we may create so many things which actually have no existence, so when we are awake we shall see that everything is simply a dream. But factually, although the demons say that life is a dream, they are very expert in enjoying this dream. And so, instead of acquiring knowledge, they become more and more implicated in their dreamland. They conclude that, as a child is simply the result of sexual intercourse between man and woman, this world is born without any soul. For them, it is only a combination of matter that has produced the living entities, and there is no question of the existence of the soul. As many living creatures come out from perspiration and from a dead body without any cause, the whole living world has come out of the material combinations of the cosmic manifestation. Therefore, material nature is the cause of this manifestation, and there is no other cause. They do not believe in the words of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Under my direction, the whole material world is moving. In other words, among the demons, there is no perfect knowledge of the creation of the world. Every one of them has some particular theory of his own. According to them, one interpretation of the scriptures is as good as another, for they do not believe in a standard understanding of the scriptural injunction. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtham Manamapi Shatiputram Atrasvarupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Giribaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatav Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavans Cha Sri Rupam Sagraja Tam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakhan Vitamstra. This purport provides an excellent example of text from Srila Prabhupada that is misquotable. We have right here in Srila Prabhupada's own book, most important book, Bhagavad Gita as it is, most important in the sense that it's the book that the text he spoke on most and is distributed most, it's the basic understanding. So Srila Prabhupada writes here, as many living creatures come out from perspiration and from a dead body without any cause, the whole living world has come out of the material combination of the cosmic manifestation. Therefore, material nature is the cause of this manifestation, and there is no other cause. There you are. It's a quote from Prabhupada's book. If you quote it like that, it's called taking it out of context, because it's within the context of Jagadahuranishwaram. Ahuhu means they say that there is no controller of this world. This is a description of the demons' philosophy, which, if we consider it, seems quite sustainable. If we examine this world, what do we see? We see everything here is temporary. Everyone is struggling to be happy. But where is the happiness? Simply trying to be happy in a futile manner. What is the happiness that Prahlad Maharaj says? Yan maituna adigrihamed hi sukham hi tucham. The happiness of materialistic people, beginning with sexual happiness, it is simply insignificant. Tucham. It almost sounds like you could spit the word out. It's meaningless. Insignificant. For that little bit of happiness, one has to work so hard. The whole world is spinning on love, as the poets say. But those who are enlightened by spiritual knowledge, they see that what is called love is lust. The same tendency that the humans, in a very sophisticated manner, are chasing after. The animals are doing so in a not very sophisticated manner. This whole Dubai, Maha Swapna Nagari, big dreamland, it's simply a manifestation of human lust, sexual desire. Big buildings, big cars, and hotels, and showing we're better, it's nice. Everything nice, clean, perfect, and the ultimate enjoyment is sexual enjoyment. All the material enjoyment is simply an expansion of that big cities are built, big buildings, simply to impress others, to show I'm better than you. Let us live comfortably and enjoy ourselves. But for all that enjoyment, so much anxiety has to be accepted. And as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, of course, we don't hear these things much nowadays, that for all the endeavor that one has to undertake, you didn't hear all that, what I said? Should I say it all again? Haribo. Hari Hari. For all the endeavor that one has to undertake to get to the point of sexual happiness, it only lasts a few seconds. And then after that, you got all the responsibility that comes with it also. Unless you're an animal. Of course, animals, many of them don't accept responsibility. Some of them do. But animals like a dog, they simply enjoy themselves, and then the unmarried mother has to look after all the little doglets or puppies. So humans who are like animals, they also breed like cats and dogs without any marriage ceremony. But people who are called civilized, they undergo marriage with all the attendant responsibilities. So there is happiness in this material world, but it is tucham, insignificant. That is, what is that? Marubhumite vari bindusam. Sutta mita ramani samaji. This tartala saikate. This song of Vidyapati. That in the burning desert, if you get a drop of water, in burning hot desert here, if you go out in the sand, you may get caught in the burning heat, and you're literally dying for water, and someone comes along with a little dropper and says, I have water for you. It's water. You can't do it. It's water. It's what you want. But it's simply insignificant. It's not enough to satisfy our need. So the material happiness is insignificant. It's always attended by much suffering. And it's meaningless. You see, someone struggles to be a big man in this world, or nowadays a big woman also. You can be leader of a country, leader of an army maybe, as a woman also. You can do anything, same thing as a man. Women, they have their liberated position to become as big fools as the men are. As the role of the biggest fool has always gone to the men in human society. Now the women also want to be as big. So you can be a very big shot. But what is the meaning? It's just a flash life. Just in a few seconds, it will all be finished. So people, they make statues, or they have their portrait painted, or they have someone write a biography of them so that their memory will be perpetuated. Or if they're a scientist, they discover some law and they put their name on it, although it was already there before they discovered it. So people try to become remembered, but it doesn't help them whatsoever to be remembered. So seeing all this, it would seem to be not a wrong theory that this world is meaningless. We may say, well, there's so much order. This is our standard argument, right, against people who's atheists. We say there's so much order in the world, well, there must be a God. But for the person who sees meaningless, the order in the world adds to the meaningless. It adds to the absurdity. There's so much order in the world, but the end result is simply disappointment, suffering. So even if there is a God, it seems like he's some kind of sadist who arranges everything just to torture us. So everything seems meaningless. Just like for someone who's imprisoned, he doesn't know why he's imprisoned, and it's a very orderly system, but he's simply being tortured and he doesn't know why. So it's meaningless. There's a famous book. Famous means somewhat famous. Maybe you didn't hear of it, but it's called The Trial by Franz Kafka. Before I had the very good fortune to be accepted in this movement that Srila Prabhupada started, I read about half the book, but it was too depressing. I couldn't finish reading it. The trial, the person is under trial, he doesn't know what for. And he's brought to the cell, and he's brought to the court, and the proceedings go on, and it just goes on like this. So, this world is like that, isn't it? That, all right, there are the laws of physics and the laws of nature, but it's just, what's the point? You know, men are chasing after women, women are chasing after men, dogs are chasing after bitches, and everything, as the Bible states, dust thou art and unto dust thou shalt become. This body is just made of matter, formed from dust, and it will become that again. So everything seems meaningless. And they say, asatyam apratishtam te. There's no truth, there's no ultimate truth, there's no ultimate meaning, there's no ultimate basis. And jagat ahur anishwaram, there's no God in control. And you say, of course, we're not going to say that, but people say, well, where's God? Can't see him, can't touch him, can't taste him, can't smell him, can't feel him. Where is the evidence? Where is the proof that there is God? You're all feeling depressed by now, hearing all of this. Pretty depressing philosophy, isn't it? So that's what they say. Religion is a crutch because they have no happiness in life, so they believe in God, and then it's a psychological crutch by which we can feel good about this life, and we'll think that even if it's miserable here, we'll get a better deal the next time round, when we'll go to heaven and enjoy there. But there's no. So religion is called a psychological crutch by one Mr. Freud, and the opiate of the people by one Mr. Marx. These are all Germanic thinkers, screwed the world up. So there's no God in control, and then, what's left to do? Well, have sex, I guess. There's no real meaning in life, but anyway, sex feels good, so let's do it, as Prabhupada notes, that even though they say this world has no meaning, and they say it's unreal, but they're very expert in enjoying it. So it seems like a very real philosophy. The world, nothing is real, sounds like a real philosophy. Put that together. Does that make any sense? You could discuss that. Is everything is unreal? Is that a real philosophy? We couldn't be real because that if it's a real philosophy, it would disprove the statement that everything is unreal. So it can't be a real philosophy. Then it must be an unreal philosophy. Wait a minute. Nothing's real. And your philosophy is also not real. That means that something's real. So then you come to Buddhism, voidism, and ideas that, you can't speak about, it's useless to speak about anything or think about anything or do anything. Nothing actually exists. Everything's just an illusion. Brahmavadis or Mayavadis, they say that, we should just, there is Satyam, but this Jagat is Mithya. Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. There is reality, but not this world. And that reality, they say, is without form. There's no perception. There's no personality. It's just bliss. Only bliss. There's no cause of that bliss. It's just bliss. There's no one to perceive the bliss because there's no people, but it's only bliss. So these are various philosophies which Krishna here describes as demoniac. What's wrong with these philosophies? I mean, it seems to make, it's kind of depressing, but it seems to make sense, doesn't it? Does it? I mean, this, everything's temporary, right? So what are we struggling for in this world? What is the happiness of this world? Makes quite, in fact, we find this throughout the Bhagavatam also, the same kind. There is, it would be a good philosophy, but there's just one thing wrong with it. That actually there is a person called Krishna. They missed Krishna. They missed everything. He is everything. He covers everything. Sarvam savapnoshi tatosi sarava, Arjuna says about Krishna. You cover everything. Mayatatamidam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina amatsthani sarvabhutani nachaham teshavastitaha. Krishna covers everything. He's in everything. He's under everything, over everything, outside everything, inside everything. But nahang prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrita mudho yang na bhijanati. The rascals, they cannot know Krishna. They cannot see Krishna. He's covered by his yogamaya potency. So the philosophy of hopelessness or meaningless, it's true if we don't know Krishna. Actually, everything is meaningless without Krishna. That is a fact. That is a fact. But with Krishna, everything is meaningful. If we don't see Krishna, then everything becomes meaningless. Or we may ascribe meaning to that which has no real meaning. Just like every time I come from India to Dubai or back, it's different Bollywood movies, but it's all more or less the same thing. It all ends up in a marriage, and then, you know, whatever it is, this way or that way, it all ends up that they get married, and that's wonderful, and that's the meaning of life. You're in love, and then I guess they don't show afterwards, but I guess the idea is you're supposed to live happily ever after. So you can ascribe meaning to that. We can try to love our wife and our children and our home and our country. And India won the World Cup cricket. I guess you all forgot about that by now. It was fun for one or two days, but then, you know, you have to get back to life, right? You can't just go on celebrating forever. You know, still the prices of food is too high, and the politicians are corrupt, and doesn't really solve the problems. Any problems. So we ascribe, yeah, so that's a good example, isn't it? Cricket. India won the World Cup. What does it mean? Someone threw a ball and someone hit it with a bat and someone ran this way and someone ran that way and they have some rules of a game and India won it. But it's basically, there's a field and some grass and a ball and people are throwing it around and they make some rules, they made up some rules and they call it a game and then they say this is the India cricket team. What is it? India? Why? That's also something made up. The political boundary of India is something made up. It's phantasmagoria, Srila Prabhupada says in this country, in this purport. So, we ascribe meaning to that which has no actual meaning. And we place our love in really phantasmagoria. Bollywood is phantasmagoria land, dream world. People like the dream world. Bollywood, and in Telugu there's Tollywood. What is it in Chennai? Kollywood. In Kerala, what is it? It's anyway, whatever it is, it's all nonsense. That we know for sure. Huh? They don't have in Kerala. They're too proud to imitate something, is it? Anyway, it's all living in dreamland. That we placing. I will fall in love. I will find the perfect woman who is the perfect match for me. I will find my Radha, and then everything will be happy. But it's not. It's not. I mean, even if things do work out well, which is pretty much a Russian roulette in this kind of, in the modern age, gambling. But you have to suffer separation, and that separation is not the same as the Radha Krishna separation. That is not Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. That's just simply material suffering. Once in Bangladesh, we were in the house of one advocate, and then we heard later his wife died, and then he was just so heartbroken that he just stopped talking to anyone, and he just sat at home like a vegetable for about 3 months, and then he died. True love, but it didn't help them at all. Because the wrong object, they ascribe meaning to that which is actually not of any meaning. So some people see this and they see this is all meaningless. What does it mean? Why be attached to all of this when it is simply, anyway, its meaning, it has no real meaning, and if you become attached it simply causes suffering. But then there's the fact of Krishna. There is meaning. There is happiness. There is Krishna. So on one hand we have many statements in Shastra which both the devotees and the Mayavadis subscribe to equally, that this material world is miserable. But that it's ultimately meaningless, this is rejected by Krishna as a demoniac idea. Actually, this world is meaningless unless we see Krishna. But we've come to this world because we don't want to see Krishna. So we don't see Krishna. We have to see Krishna through the eye of Shastra. Otherwise, it is meaningless. Without Krishna, everything is meaningless. We have no meaning, no direction. With Krishna, then everything is perfect. Without Krishna, everything is meaningless. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, Ebe Shuno Prabhu Ami Gati Heen Bhakati Vino Dakoi. He says, now listen to me, Prabhu, my master. Ami Gati Heen, I have no direction, no purpose. Everything is meaningless. Bhaktivinoda says, Tava kripa bina shakali nirasha. Without your mercy, everything is hopeless. Deho more padashray. Give me the shelter of your lotus feet. So everything is meaningless, but with Krishna, everything is meaningful. So this idea of meaninglessness, it's true to some extent. This material world, as it is conventionally considered, it's meaningless. Newspapers, education system, career prospects, it's all meaningless. Newspaper, the news, bombing Libya, what else is there? So much. What else? Bombing Syria, Yemen. When's it coming to Dubai? It's on Egypt. Unrest. These demons, actually they're demons. They foment all this unrest. and then they report, and then they go in to solve it. It's all, you know, CIA and all this kind of thing. They stir up trouble. They support all the rebels, and then they okay, we're coming in here to restore all law and order, which means, you know, I often think that Hitler was in some ways better than these modern demons, because in the name of human rights and all this, they invade other countries. But Hitler just said, you know, we're a bunch of, shouldn't say the word, no, I won't say it, you'll be shocked. But anyway, we're a bunch of not very nice people, and get out of here. We're kicking you out and killing you, and we're taking over. That's all. So he was, at least he was straightforward. So newspapers, yeah, it's, you know, it's the daily lies and propaganda. History means, history is just a bunch of lies about, or to motivate you to see the world in a certain way. The education system is motivates you, so you think, yeah, I want to get ahead, get a good job, make a success of my life, and really, you know, have a good time. And it's just cheating. So everything, TV, radio, what's that? Internet, yeah. All different propaganda. And then someone comes out, yes, now we have a film which proves that the American government is cheating and 9/11 was an inside job, and rude, do something about it, and they're all cheaters. And what are you going to do? Big, blowing a big horn. It's all meaningless. Just like at the marriage, they blow big horn and the man rides on a horse, or they used to. What do they do nowadays? They get on a big imitation space rocket or something. They used to go around the town on a horse. I don't think they do that anymore. Anyway. So when, and then you know, you have your honeymoon, and then there you are. You have a life working, pay off the mortgage. And so it's all meaningless. But Krishna is the fact. The Mayavadis, they may accept that also, but they accept Krishna to be a fact in the same way that everything else they perceive as a fact. They perceive it as a fact within illusion. Krishna, therefore they're called Mayavadis. They think Krishna is also Maya. Everything in this world is Maya. Krishna comes in this world, therefore he's also Maya. Therefore we kick in your face and you can enjoy. It's only an illusion. Don't protest. As Srila Prabhupada often used to say, you kick in the face with boots. He didn't do it physically, of course, but verbally, certainly he did. So, the fact of Krishna. Now, we may say, well, we didn't see, touch, smell, feel, taste, or hear Krishna, so what is the evidence of his existence? Well, again, we can logically discuss how actually, everyone's looking for happiness, therefore, ultimately there is happiness, but not in this world. But logic, of course, someone can argue against that also. If people are somewhat reasonable, they should accept there is a supreme benign controller. But many people, they think, no, how can the supreme controller be benign when this world is full of suffering? Just a few days ago, for the first time ever, there was an interview of the Pope on TV, and the questions were mostly about suffering. Why is there suffering? And his reply was, we cannot know. Means he doesn't know. He's supposed to be a spiritual leader. Why is there suffering? Because you eat meat every day, big Pope. That's why there's suffering. Dalai Lama, another big rascal, talks of peace and eats lots of meat every day. Not just a little, but he's a big glutton. Apart from being a meat eater, he's a big glutton. So, all this cheating propaganda is there. People don't know Krishna. Yeah, logic. That's the point I was talking about. Logically, we can explain that ultimately reality is good, reality is beautiful, reality is true, satyam, shivam, sundaram. But people may say, well, look at the world, it's miserable. How can we think that there's a benign God? Why do you believe in God? That's why there are some, in the Western countries, there are a fair number of people who call themselves Satanists. They worship Satan. Satan is something made up by someone in the Arabic desert a long time ago, who's features as a prime figure in the Bible and the Quran. But we don't find any such person in Vedic culture. There are asuras, but not one devil. So the Satanists say, hey, we're worshipping Satan. He's the real boss. Even if there is a God, he lost control long ago. Satan's in charge. So better worship him. This world is full of violence and hatred, so better worship Satan. He's the boss. He's definitely doing better than God. God's out of the picture here. Goodness doesn't rule, evil rules, so better worship Satan. That's what they say. Difficult one to argue against if you don't know the actual fact. So, it seems reasonable to say, yeah, well, the world is bad. How can you say there's any God? This Ram Jetmalani, he said, that I used to believe in God. But when I went to the scene of the earthquake in Gujarat, then I stopped believing. I saw so much suffering. Because people think God means he should set everything up so we can enjoy ourselves in this world. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, this question, why is there suffering? We cannot know. You see Bhagavad Gita, Purusham, Purusha Sukha Dukkhanam Bhoktritve Hetu Ruchate. We ourselves are the cause of our own happiness and distress. Ichha Dvesha Samuthena Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarva Bhutani Samoham Sarga Yanti Parantava. We have come to this world because of perverted desire. And the opposite of love toward others. So man is the architect of his own destiny. We get what we deserve. We're suffering in this world because we cause suffering to others. So this is a reasonable philosophy by which we can establish the existence of God. Then others can go on arguing, but ultimately Praman is Shabda. The Vedas give knowledge of the Supreme Reality. Of course, the Mayavadis will interpret the Vedas to say that ultimately there is no... The Mayavadis take Shastra also. Mayavadis also take Shastra and twist it out to come to this conclusion. Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahura nishwaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. So Krishna, he is the actual substantive principle. He is everything. He is the basis of everything. This world is not unreal. It's not going on simply as... there are two theories from the non-devotee side. One is that it's simply going on by chance, which is discussed here, which is an absurd proposition. But that's what they say. Yeah, everything's absurd. So to say that everything happens by chance, well, that fits with the absurdity. So they a priori, they presume that everything is absurd. Or because they see themselves and their own enjoyment as the ultimate principle of everything, and they see, well, I'm not getting my enjoyment, therefore this world must be absurd. So Krishna consciousness means to see from a different perspective altogether, that there is Krishna, there is God, and we are meant to serve Him. This is the mistake that everyone makes, whether they're Mayavadis or extremely neophyte theists who think that the world is created by God for us to enjoy. Therefore they cannot explain why there is, if God is good, why is there suffering? They cannot explain it, because they think if God is good, then He should make everything nice for us. He should supply us nice fresh beef every day to eat. I guess that's what they think. Most of the people, they believe in God, and they think, I believe in God, therefore I'm going to heaven, and in heaven you're happy. And happy means you enjoy yourself, so there must be plenty of beef, because that's what we like. So it's extremely egoistic, self-centered view of reality. But beyond all of this, there is Krishna. What is the proof of Krishna? Krishna is the proof of Krishna. He comes to this world and shows His pastimes. But then people, they say, well, Krishna, there's no such person. No such person actually existed. Or there was some tribal god called Vishnu got grafted onto the Krishna. So this tribal god called Krishna got merged with the Vedic Vishnu theory. This is what these, if you go to university and study Indology, this is how they mess you up, all the kind of things they say. So in this way they try to explain away Krishna. But actually Krishna comes to this world. He shows His pastimes. He speaks Bhagavad Gita, which, if at all we are to accept that there is, beyond absurdity, there is intelligence, there is meaning, everything is not absurd, then see Bhagavad Gita. The newspaper is rubbish today, and definitely tomorrow it's rubbish. Anyway, it's rubbish today, but people think it's meaningful today. But by tomorrow, definitely it's rubbish. Even for people who are interested in newspapers, yesterday's newspaper is rubbish. But Bhagavad Gita is still being studied thousands of years after it was spoken. Of course, various demons, they put it at only 3,000 years. Actually, it's 5,000 years ago it was spoken. And long before that also. But it is meaningful, and we can read it every day. And we'll find that it's always meaningful. So that in itself, for the sake of any demons here who may not believe in Krishna, of course I know you're not like that, but we should consider these points, because Krishna explains this to Arjuna. Arjuna also wasn't a demon, so why is Krishna explaining to him? So that we can more clearly understand the situation and more clearly focus our intelligence on the actual fact. Intelligence is also a factor. Bhakti is not just all feeling. Buddha bhava samanvita, we find. Bodhayanta, these three verses in a row, isn't it? Aham sarvasya prabhava mata. Sarvang pravadide iti matbhava jantevam. Buddha bhava samanvita. With intelligence, their intelligence. And then the next verse, matchita madgata prana bodhayanta. The same term coming from, it means enlightening, it comes from the same root, buddhi. And then what's the verse after that? Rajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogantam. Yeah. So intelligence is also required. So Krishna, He's speaking to Arjuna about the demons. It's not that Arjuna is a demon, he's a devotee, but he also needs to understand very clearly what is the situation of the demons. Arjuna was being sentimental. He didn't want to kill demons. He's saying, there's my family members, gurus. Of course, Bhishma and Drona, they weren't demons, but they were fighting on the side of demons. So Kshatriya, they were fighting on the side of Adharma. So they should be killed. Arjuna, he shouldn't be sentimental. He should understand the situation clearly. So we should understand these points. These demoniac philosophies which are spoiling the world, and understand clearly what are the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. That it's not all right to be a nice demon, to have a nice suit and tie and eau de cologne and be nicely shaved, unlike me. Nicely shaved. And speak very politely and not accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's, one should understand, an actual gentleman is one who takes shelter of Krishna, who is a pure devotee of Krishna, who has no attraction for this material world, is only attracted to Krishna. So demons, they say everything is meaningless. But that in itself is a meaningless statement to say everything is meaningless. Because even if you say everything is meaningless, that very statement has a meaning, right? And you wouldn't say it if you didn't think that the person hearing it could understand the meaning. You say everything is meaningless. You don't say, Alamaratu. That's Alamaratu is, that means everything is meaningless in a language which I just made up. I'm just saying as a... You see, if I said it in some language, if I was to say that in Chinese, I don't hear any Chinese-speaking people. Any Chinese-speaking people here? No. So if I was to say that, for instance, in Mandarin Chinese, to you it would be meaningless, because you can't understand it. But if I say it in a language you can understand, I say it because I am confident that you can understand it. So even to say everything is meaningless, and then you discuss about it, well, even if you discuss about it, that means that there's meaning to the words. It's accepted that the other person understands what you're saying. That's why these people are crazy. Because they're talking nonsense. And actually, if they do just go crazy, which is likely to happen, if you just go round and round philosophizing in your mind, you'll never come to any conclusion and you just go crazy. Actually, or you come up with crazy ideas. What goes on in the name of philosophy is mostly the ranting of madmen, often under the influence of some intoxication. So it is better to take knowledge from Krishna, who is the meaning. Without Krishna, everything is meaningless. But we can't be without Krishna. We cannot be, but we can imagine ourselves to be without Krishna. And with Krishna, everything is all talking, tasting, laughing, having friends, eating, everything becomes fully meaningful. We can't see Krishna? Well, we can see Krishna. People say we can't see God. Yeah, we can see God. Can't see, touch, smell, taste, feel, hear. Yeah, you can, everything. Krishna can be seen, touched, smelled, tasted, felt, everything. But it requires a little faith to go beyond the platform of simply relying on our own senses to understand everything. The sensual platform is a very low platform. Indriyani purani avar indriyebhya parangmanha manasastu parabhutya yo buddhe paratastusa. The sensual platform is the lowest platform. The animals are on that platform. In the modern age, everyone's simply on the sensual platform. Not even on the mental platform, intellectual platform. What to speak of the spiritual platform? Simply on the sensual platform. Everyone is kept as a fool on the sensual platform. You see, this Dubai is all developed for sensual enjoyment. Intellectual, is there any intellectual life here? Yeah, that's all. Well, in traditional Arab culture, they do have a culture of poetry, actually. I don't know if it goes on in this country much.
They do have.
They have like poetry competition. Yeah, that's.
We have Quran recitations.
Quran recitations, yeah. So that's some culture. But basically, this whole area is built up just on sense gratification. It goes dolphins and. Oh, when it's coming in, they have the advertisements, go and swim with the dolphins and all kinds of things. Gamble away your money, shop till you drop and all this kind of invest, enjoy like this. Very strongly on the sensual platform. And people are attracted by that, but that's also there, of course, in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the actual real sense enjoyment. Kirtan, prasadam. But then again, we have to see that we don't get carried away on the sensual platform. If we think this is for my enjoyment. Yeah, I like that kirtan. That was a good kirtan. But does Krishna like it? We have to see. Anyway, there are so many discussions. But Krishna is meaningful. We should understand how Krishna is the only meaning. Everything else, it's shakali nirasha. It's all simply hopeless. Everything is hopeless without Krishna. It's what these people say is true in that sense. Your career, your home, your family, your friends, your country, you're winning the World Cup cricket, everything is meaningless. Everything is meaningless. That's true. But with Krishna, then everything becomes meaningful. Of course, with Krishna, there is no World Cup cricket anyway. You don't waste your time with all that kind of thing. But family, friends, everything, that can be in Krishna consciousness. But in Krishna consciousness, then becomes meaningful. Otherwise, everything meaningless. So, yeah, asatyam apratishtam, it's a fact, without Krishna. And if we ascribe any reality to this world other than Krishna, it's simply foolishness. But if we don't see Krishna, either by ascribing meaning to putra dara grihadishu, children, home, wealth, and all that. So that's foolishness. Or if we instead say, well, nothing has any meaning. There's no meaning whatsoever. That's another kind of foolishness. So Krishna here is pointing out these different kinds of, not only foolishness, but also rascaldom. As we know, Srila Prabhupada, he often used these two words together, fools and rascals. So fool and rascal, it's more or less the same thing. But fool is what you think, and then rascal when you act on what you think, then you become a rascal. So we should be cured of this foolishness and rascaldom by understanding what Krishna is teaching in Bhagavad Gita. It's not Krishna's sectarian claim. Just like, we see here in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that Dvo bhutao sarge loko smin daiva asura evacha. There are two kinds of people in this world, the demons and the godly people. So it's not like, like we hear in some that there's our religion and then everything else is all useless. It's not like that. They're simply condemning others because they don't believe what you believe. But all these points should be understood philosophically. And understand that those who ascribe absolute meaninglessness That may sound very philosophical and very intellectual, but it springs ultimately from a desire to enjoy this world. It's not different in that sense from that of the gross hedonists who simply want to enjoy the world to the full extent. I remember this still, the first time I remembered, read a statement in one of Srila Prabhupada's purports in the Adi Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, 7th chapter. Srila Prabhupada wrote that factually, this section talks about the Mayavadis and the Buddhists. So Prabhupada wrote that factually both the Kashi Mayavadis and the Sarnath Buddhists are gross materialists. And I thought, well, that's very strange, because they're spiritual people. At least they don't seem to be gross materialists. They deliberately try to be detached from this world. But what it comes down to ultimately is that they become, the result of their philosophy is gross materialism, because kim anyat kama haitukam. There's no meaning in this world, there's no direction, there's no God. If you believe that, but you're still left with your senses. You're still left with the desire to enjoy. So you either have the choice of taking up terrible austerities to try and become liberated and then become nothing, or enjoy this world. And that's what actually happens by the preaching of Mayavad, that people actually become more and more materialistic, because you think that, well, why should I undertake such austerities? For what? Just to become nothing. Well, okay, this world's meaningless, but we might as well enjoy it, because what else is there to do? So ultimately these philosophies, they produce gross materialism, worse materialism. The Vedic Kanda is better in that regard. At least there's some restriction. But if you say the world is meaningless, then there's no need of any rules, regulations, there's no morality, there's no right or wrong, and just enjoy yourself, that's all. So this is the Krishna's analysis of the mentality of the demons. This chapter should be studied. It's by devotees in the modern age. It's so pertinent to the modern age. We can see all these statements. Kamam ashritya. They've taken shelter of lust. Kamam ashritya dushpuram dambhamana madanvita. It's simply arrogant, bewildered, proud. So we can see how this so much applies to the modern world. You can read the newspaper and you'll see it matches up exactly with the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the description of the demons. So we should see the world through these eyes, through the eye of Krishna's teaching us in Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? No question. All right, so we should finish. We'll have a few minutes kirtan. You have time for that? All right. So,
let's see. As I said, in a few minutes you'll be able to tell us just what are the main events that have happened.
Main events that have happened?
In the last month.
What preaching programs have I been in? Oh, I've been very busy preaching, sitting on a farm for the last month. Just coming in at the weekend for doing programs. But writing. Writing and writing and writing. Busy preaching. I really, really have to stop traveling. I should just sit and write. I've got so much work to do in writing. Maybe I can show you some of it. It's just if I sit and so many things are coming by Krishna's grace. So, but I can't keep up with it all, so I should stop traveling and sit and write. And by Krishna's grace, some meaningful books should come out. I'm not writing this Alan Watts kinds of books. Alan Watts was a... In America, he popularized Buddhism, especially Zen Buddhism. He was a well-known author among the hippies. When he was asked to write a review of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, he became very angry because he didn't like it. When Prabhupada was told, he became pleased that this Buddhist became angry when he had Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So yeah, I'm just saying that I was that's just something in my own mind, because I remember as a kid reading a book by Alan Watts explaining the Zen Buddhism, and just, and by Krishna's grace, even at that age, I had enough sense to understand it's just total nonsense. The famous sound of one hand clapping. Just completely, it's just bizarre. It's just you have to sit meditating, and if your shoulder droops for a second, they'll beat you with a stick. You have to sit there and meditate and meditate, and all of a sudden you realize, ding! And then I guess you're authorized to go around and beat people with a stick. I don't know. All these stories of the master sitting in the cave, and the cella comes up, and the master refuses to see him, and after 3 days standing in the snow, he calls him in, and then he goes inside the cave for 20 years or something, and he comes out self-realized. Just madness. So meaningful. Something meaningful should come, not simply lyrical poetry, but what we should all try to make some meaningful contribution to the Sankirtan movement. Meaningful has another meaning, significant. Do something meaningful. Not pie in the sky or castles in the air. Do something meaningful for Krishna. So what I've been doing for the last month is mostly sitting and writing. Doesn't sound very exciting. But I'm fired up. I'm into it.
What are the topics you're trying
to do? Not any one topic. Discursive. Mostly Bhagavad Gita, but not systematic. If we examine Bhagavad Gita with prayerful intelligence, we'll find so much. The same words are used again and again in different contexts. And then how that, and just like we see different things, how what's stated in one place relates to something else. Stithadhi Muni. Before that we have Vyavasayatmikabud. So that is the, like this, we can see the correlation. It's a big, big ocean of Bhagavad Gita. Then if you want to diversify, then, and get, just like Krishna, he speaks several times in Bhagavad Gita about the sun. And just think about the sun. Pretty amazing, isn't it? Every day, the amazing phenomenon of the sun arising. So that is worshipped in Gayatri Mantra. The sun, the magnificent sun. So like that. It's mostly on Bhagavad. But that's, yeah, I have to stop and actually do something systematic. Not systematic, that's the problem. Unsystematic. But it seems also that Shastra is what in modern terms we might call unsystematic. In modern education you have this module, that module, take a topic, this, that, but Shastra, often it doesn't seem to be systematic in that way. But there's a purpose in that also. Shastra is actually, the traditional system is a guru will teach a disciple. And he'll either choose the book to teach, or in the sampradaya they'll have certain books which they emphasize. And they'll teach that. And it's not that everything you do, not necessarily what we call systematic in the modern way. But the points are taught and gradually the disciple realizes it may not go in a linear manner. The education, it's not exactly knowledge acquisition as we think of it in the modern terms, but it's more awakening our consciousness of who we are in relationship to Krishna and negating the misunderstanding of our having any relation to anyone or anything outside of a relationship with Krishna. So it's more works on the ego than on the intelligence. Definitely intelligence is there. Definitely the intelligence is there, but not as it's understood from the mundane perspective. There are so many things in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna, he speaks so disparagingly about karma. But then we cannot be with that. Ultimately, the Mayavadis, they may say, okay, stop all karma. But that's not Krishna's message at all. The message is to purify it. Bhakti is, of course, we talk about sakama bhakti and nishkama bhakti. So which is better, sakama bhakta or nishkama bhakta? Which is better? You say nishkama, but actually there's no such thing as nishkama. Bhakti means sakam, but the kam is for Krishna, for pleasing Krishna. So when it says nishkam or sakam, that's in terms of material desire. But actually the desire must be there to please Krishna, otherwise there's no bhakti, there's no meaning to it. So Krishna himself, he is Kama Deva. If we get up to Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll find out who is that Kama Deva who maddens the whole world. That's the Aprakrita Madan is Krishna. So anyway, we can go through Bhagavad Gita and maybe at some point we'll get up to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Which is a very different kind of book to Bhagavad Gita, actually. Bhagavad Gita is just a very rich, concentrated philosophy, which is also there, of course, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but the linguistic structure and it's quite different. Definitely there's a lot of philosophy in there, but it's presented in a very different style. I had to think about it a bit and pray for some intelligence to explain that more clearly. But it's definitely a very different kind of presentation, much bigger and in story form like this. Yeah, so you're having problem with your voice still. Then you can write also. Can't speak? Write. I also have problems with my voice. I tend to lose my voice. So can't speak? Write. It's a bigger kirtan, so we're told by our acharyas.
For the first time, coincidentally, I started writing something.
That's good. You should write. After so many years of studying Shastra and speaking on Shastra, there should be some solid realization. There should be something. So that can be, for our own clarification, also writing helps to clarify that. Because in speaking, it may be all over the place. It may not be very ordered. The thoughts may come this way. Even the language structure is not very systematic, but in writing it should be quite systematic and quite clear. One feature of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's writings, people find it's very difficult to understand. That's true in one sense. But another thing, his style around speaking, especially in Bengali, that his writing is such that it's practically impossible to misinterpret the way his language is structured. It's very sharp and very clear. I'm told that's also a feature of Madhva, although he wrote in such sutras that no one could understand it, but then it was fluffed out later by the Jayatirtha, Vyasatirtha, Tikacharyas. So, yeah, we should be philosophical, as Prabhupada was philosophical. Prabhupada was always talking philosophy, day and night, literally. Generally, people remember how he smiled and this and that, but of course, not that he didn't smile, but he was talking philosophy. He was a guru. Guru means who teaches. So that's what he was doing. He wrote books, he lectured, when he met with people, he discussed philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. So we're going to have kirtan. I went on with another kind of kirtan. That's also kirtan. The nine processes of devotional service, which are exemplified by nine devotees. So kirtan is exemplified by Asaki. That's exactly the name given in the verse by Rupa Goswami, Shukadev Goswami. Right, by speaking Bhagavatam, kirtan. You can also study Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's stated in the Nectar of Devotion.
I request all of you to take a few minutes. There's a spread of books out there. It's on Bhaktivinoda Swami Maharaj.